What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL. Joined as always by my main man, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, what's going on, brother?
Man, it's another glorious day in the neighborhood. It's getting nice and chilly outside. Got to get the toboggan on, and it's doing great, man.
Yeah, I picked a great time to get my I do like 2 to 3 haircuts a year. Just because I find getting a haircut is like extremely inconvenient for me. Not that I don't want it. It's just like making the time to go do it is annoying.
Which is like the exact opposite for me. Like for me, one of my favorite things to do, I don't have the time to go do it. And it rubs me the wrong way because I would love to be able to just whenever I'm like ready to go get it done. But I love getting a haircut. I love being pampered.
I love the fresh haircut because like you can chuck all you want to, but my hats fit better, you ain't got all that stuff going on. The beard looks cleaner because they do a way better job of getting it, shaped up than I do. I'm not very great at it, but yeah, I love getting it done, but too, just like trying to make the time to go do it is, cause most haircut places have like weird hours where they're closed by 6. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're not here to talk about, haircuts.
We're here to talk about whatever we want to talk about,
man. We're here to talk about football and a game that happened on Sunday. And I guess we might as well just get into it. Oh, what a game. What a game. What a game. Obviously, as y'all know by now, the Falcons lost to the Bucs at home after beating the Jets on the road in an ugly game. You thought being back in the safe confines of Mercedes-Benz Stadium where everything's nice and dry and, climate control, that we'd have a better showing. And you know what? There was aspects of it that was a better showing. Yardage wise, that was like Ritter's best game passing as a pro. Still had some major mistakes, as he seems to be having every game. Like you have the safety in the end zone.
I don't think that was a mistake on him.
We can agree to disagree on that one. But if you're double clutching in the end zone, that's a problem.
That play is designed to have the fullback go out and block a blitzer, and your fullback whiffs. I mean, absolutely whiffs on the block. Okay, so like he's expecting his fullback to hold up enough for him to maybe get to his second read. He didn't even have that.
I understand, but in the end zone, you have to know where you are.
Yeah.
Right. You have to know the situation. You have to know that you don't have the time that you would have. Even with the fullback blocking whatsoever, right? It's not you're asking also in that particular situation, you know that a fullback's taking on a D end. You don't have that kind of time. Not the kind of time you do when it's a tackle.
But it wasn't a D end. It was a safety, I think. A safety or a corner.
I thought it was a DN. Could be wrong. Either way, you double clutch, mm-hmm. and you're opening yourself up to problems. When you come up, if that read where you want to go ain't there, you got to get rid of the ball. Now, we could talk about the play call as far as like, hey, why aren't we running the ball to try to get some more space?
Yeah.
And that we can talk about too, because Bradley is confirming with you it was a safety. I'm remembering it wrong. So, I'm thinking just last guy on the on the line. But I agree with Jones here. Coach should have never called the play. There's two wrongs don't make a right, as we've been taught.
Look, like whether a coach should or should not have called the play is entirely dependent on two things. One, the guy's actually executed the play properly. Okay. And two, was it successful? If it was successful, nobody says anything about it. Nobody says that it was a bad call. There's rare occasions where things work out miraculously, but you can still look back and be like, that was a bad call. You still shouldn't have done it. You got away with it, but you should have done it. We see teams all the time backed up that deep. Everybody's like, oh, they're going to run it. They're going to run it. They're going to run it. And you pull out a pass, try to catch off guard. I get it. I personally wouldn't have done it. I would have just tried to run it to get you some space. But at the end of the day, it's a situation where, again, because of the negative outcome of that, everybody looks at it and says, oh, he should have never called that play. Well, if he knew that was going to happen, of course he wouldn't have called that play. That was not the expectation.
I get that. Like, it's you look like a genius if it works. You look like a fool if it doesn't. We say that all the time when a coach gambles on a play of any kind, right?
Yeah.
So with that being said, you know, the general logic is you have Tyler Allgeier, Bijan Robinson, Cordell Patterson, at least try to get yourself some breathing room.
Yeah.
Yeah. My problem with the play, whether it's the right call or not, is, again, if you're double clutching and you're standing in your own end zone, you have to have, as a quarterback, you have to have that situational awareness. You have to know that if I come up and that read that I want isn't there, then I got to get rid of that ball. Like, the you're in your head, your clock has to be sped up, right?
Yeah.
You know, whatever, you know, you think you have, you know, whatever time you think you have, you don't, right? Not, especially not in the end zone. So it's not just that. It's, you know, it's the safety, the interception and the fumble. I mean, that's a 15-point swing in on those plays.
Which fumble?
It was a fumble towards the – I was on their side of the field. Or on our side of the field, rather, wasn't it?
We didn't lose that one.
No, okay, that's right.
It was a fumbled snap. Whoever was at cause, I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
Right. Doesn't really matter, but yeah, he got that one back. There was the safety, which was a blindside hit.
Safety, the 2-point, the interception that set them up for a touchdown.
Yep.
So, either way.
The interception to me was, you can look at it and say, should Ritter have seen that guy? Maybe, maybe not. But that kind of play specifically is almost like it's a situation where there's not really, unless it's a lot of quarterbacks are going to run that play exactly the same way that was ran, because that's how that play is supposed to go. There's really no other option for that play. And that's the way those plays typically are run, is this is going to be a screen pass out there. You're going to get it out. Now, maybe he could have got it out there quicker. Maybe he could have got it out there higher up, or who knows, lower down, whatever. But at the end of the day, it was a call that I think you give more credit to the defender for paying attention to film, watching tape, picking up on tendencies, all those things, and then taking a gamble, and it paid off for him. I'm not going to put every single turnover that we ever have that's like, oh, well, it's on us. We could have prevented it. That's not always the case. It is what it is. But that kind of play, I don't necessarily ding a rookie, because I still consider him a rookie quarterback on making that play in that situation.
No,
it's the dumb ones where, you know, he gets it knocked out going into the end zone. Those are the things that really grind my gears. But that pick, I mean, it sucks that it happened where it happened. It sucks that it happened when it happened. But at the end of the day, I'm not looking at that play and being like, how could Ritter do that?
No, it's to me at this junction of the season when I talk about, or when I talk like this, it's the culmination. It's the it's the evidence that continues to, you know, add on to the case. You see what I'm saying? It's not a isolated incident. Oh, this is the one, this is the straw that broke the camel's back. No, this is a culmination of, okay, these are we're trending in the wrong direction. Like when I look at things, I very rarely look at them in a vacuum, very rarely look at them on a one game basis. I, you know, as when everybody's like, oh man, you know, Ritter was the guy or whoever wasn't the guy, you know, I've always been like, especially in these past few years, has been a wait and see. Like, I need more evidence before I can make definitive decisions. I'm getting to the point where I have the quote unquote evidence that I need and or have been looking for to start making definitive statements in the way the trends are going, right? And so before we get much more into that, we got folks like popping off in the chat with monies that we need to get worked on. All right, so Willie Doc, Willie, we appreciate you. He's getting us started off with a with his ballers and fallers. Baller, AJ Terrell, faller, Koo, honorable mention, Ryan Nunez, or Noozle Nunez.
Yeah.
Side eye glance, Ritter and Rigone. This is nuts. We will get definitely into that. Bradley, we appreciate you. Good sir.
Bradley, appreciate it, sir.
Shown his colors, his talents, but he can't hit the layups. That miss on the goal line to Bijan was the nail. He lacks short yardage touch. Yeah, we're going to continue getting into this. I'm going to roll off all these just so we can get these taken care of.
Padre,
we appreciate you. Padre says, hey, fellas, do either of you see a utility in having Smith as our head coach in 24? No joke, legit asking. We're going to get into that. So good question. Yes. Because I've got some serious thoughts on that. Greater Tone.
Oh.
He says, we need an OC and a QB coach. We're going to get into that, right? We're going to get into all of these. Cause I know that's where everybody's at.
Red Butts.
He says, not feeling well at all, but oh man, before you lie, I hate to hear that you're not feeling well. I know there's some crud going around. So yeah.
I had it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm about to say, get you some rest, bud. He says, not feeling well at all. Before I log off, the defense is starting to let Ritter down at the end of the games, and we're still winning the division. We still got a chance, obviously, to win the division. So, we'll, like I said, all these are topics that we're going to get into. And, buddy, y'all are already lighting up the chat big time. So, let's get into our ballers and followers. That way we can get into chat proper. All right. This week's ballers and followers are brought to you by everybody who just gave us a little bit of money, because that's how this ball game works, folks. So first up, yeah, somebody hit, I think it was Willie Doc, nailed it on the head. It was,
yep.
AJ Terrell, after coming off being in concussion protocol, playing, and Okuda was unable to play. Mm-hmm. AJ Terrell had the unenviable task of locking down Mike Evans, who has been going off these past few weeks, and he did just that. He locked him down quite well. I think it was like 8 targets, 1 catch for like 8 yards. So they definitely did not let Mike Evans beat him. That's for sure.
No.
All right. So the faller is Koo. I could have put, you know, Richie Grant, but it's questionable in a sense whether you have Trey Flowers. When you brought him in, with the tag of like covering tight ends. But anyway, yeah. So I could say Richie Grant, but to me, Younghoe Koo, who's been an extremely reliable kicker and still is, he has a game like this every now and again, missed the 2 field goals. You make those.
Granted,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the only thing I will say, you know, as a, you know, as far as him being the follower is, at the very least, both field goals were 50 plus yards.
Yep. They were long.
So, So they were long. And the first one was just a miss. I don't know what in the hell happened in the second one. That thing knuckled like crazy.
And he had like you. Even with that being said, you don't hesitate to send him back out there for another 50 plus yarder. Like, not at all. This is a faller for like this week only, you know, kind of thing. I still trust, you know, Koo. Millie wants to know how many weeks has Ritter been a faller. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. It's been multiple. He's been one of the few multiple fallers. But anyway, we try not to do multiple, like the same people over and over again. So
laces out, Dan.
That's right, Dan. Laces out, Dan. All right, honorable mentions. Since that has made it into the deal, I thought about going with Clark Phillips because he played very admirably in 2 weeks in a row now with spot starting. But I went with Drake London. My man, bossed up big time. Yeah, 10 catches for 175 yards and a 2-point conversion. He was absolutely a nightmare to handle he was doing his best Mike Evans impression.
Yeah, he was really good. Every time I turned around, it seemed like he was catching a ball and was really like they leaned on him. Some people were like, well, finally, they did last week too. It just didn't work. Things just didn't connect. But this week, he had 10 catches on 11 targets. So they were hitting at a very good clip. Mm-hmm. He made that super crazy good play, literally snatched an interception away from a guy to come down with it. And in my eyes, my first thoughts coming out of the game were, if I was looking at ballers, it was going to be either AJ Terrell, Drake London, or in my personal opinion, though it's obviously not here, in my personal opinion, in that group would have also been Ritter, because I think for the most part he played a pretty good game.
Outside of about 4 or 5 plays, 4 or 5 decisions, he played one of his better games. But I hate to say it like this, and this is, I guess we can go ahead and move on into some of the other topics. My problem, and this is going to be me ranting in a sense, right? So I welcome your rebuttals completely, because I was sitting here looking at it. I was like, okay. I said, I wonder at this junction, because we said last year that if we were getting the kind of play that we were getting from Mariota from a rookie, we wouldn't be as aggravated. I distinctly remember us saying that. Where did that? Oh, snap. Come on now. Screenshots. Got to find screenshots. There they are. Okay. So, I went on to Pro Football Focus, where you can compare, not Pro Football Focus, Pro Football Reference, where you can compare seasons, stats and all that jazz. And right now, we are 12 games in with Ritter. So I compared him to the 13 games last year of Mariota before he got benched. Ritter is 6-5 because you can't put the two losses that Heinicke had. You don't put those on him. So he's 6-5. Mm-hmm. Mariota was 5-8. Okay. Similar. Completion percentage for Ritter was 63.5. Mariota, 61.3.
Yep.
A tick better.
Yeah.
Passing yards, 2,376. Passing yards from Mariota, 2,219. So about 100 yards more. Mm-hmm. A little more than 100 yards. 160 yards more. Passing yards per attempt, 7.1. Mariota's 7.4. Passing yards per game, 198 to Mariota's 170. A little bit better. Yeah. Passing touchdowns, 9. Mariota's passing touchdowns, 15. Both of them had 9 interceptions. Ritter has an 82.4 QB rating, where Mariota had an 88 QB rating. Rushing attempts, Ritter's only had 46, where Mariota at this point had 85. Obviously, that meant Mariota had much higher numbers in yards, 438 to Ritter's 195. And rushing touchdowns, Ritter has 5, Mariota had 4.
Yep.
So, okay. So the fact that they're like this, mm-hmm. the big difference here is you could say Mariota's a 7-8 year vet, so he should be up here. Okay. Yeah. Right. So my question is, does this then start to speak to the system? Right. Now, y'all hold that thought as I keep, rocking here. I want to spill all my gut, so to speak. yeah, I guess this answers my question from last year, which was like, I could accept this play from a rookie. Obviously, I can't.
This is you hypocrite.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm a hypocrite, right? Because, yes, this is his first full season starting. He did have a off season to where, of doing nothing but being in this system. So you were hoping for a step forward, right?
Yeah.
What we're getting is the exact same. This is the part that bugs me, right? Last year, 15 full games from Davis Mills. That was the third round starter from the Houston Texans that everybody's like, oh, we'll give him a year and see what happens. And then they went out and drafted CJ Stroud, right? We kind of feel like we're in that similar situation with Desmond Ridder. Okay. So now here's the difference. He was 3-10-1, as where Desmond is 6-5.
Yeah.
Completion percentage for Davis Mills is 61%, as to Desmond's 63. Passing yards, 3,118. So 3,118 for the 15 games. Dez, he'd have to like in 3 fewer games. So he's at 23. So if he gets his normal 200 in the next 4 games, that's 800. That gets you right at 31 in more games. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the yards per game, they're pretty close. 207 to 198. Passing touchdowns, 17 from Davis Mills, 9 from Ritter so far. Interceptions, 15. There's a difference, right? When we get mad and upset with Ritter's turnovers, because it's one thing I was even citing a minute ago, right, was the turnovers. We have to, as you wisely pointed out, we have to admit, as of right now, he's only had 14 turnovers, and that's if you include the fumbles lost. So it's not as bad as, we like to point it out. So anyway, what I'm getting at is like his numbers are pretty similar to Davis Mills, which is problematic to me.
Well, yeah. And so if let's go and let's look at, a guy who I believe should be in the Hall of Fame, and has had a great career. If we look at Matt Ryan, the total amount in his first year, the total amount of touchdowns that he was responsible for, either throwing it or rushing it in, he was responsible for 17 touchdowns. As of right now, with 4 games to go, and let's say we'll even say give him 3.
Okay? Yeah, because we'll say we'll cut it off at 16.
Cut it off at 16.
Right.
Within the next 3 games, you're probably going to see at least 1 touchdown from Ritter, whether it's passing or running, in each of those games. that's just going to be my guess here. So if we get at least one touchdown from him in the next over the next three, you know, each game for the next three games, he will be matching Matt Ryan for total amount of points put up on the board for a season. Like probably be in the same, about the same range yardage wise, probably be about in the same range INT wise. Cause I think he, right now he's sitting at 9. I think Matt Ryan had like 11 or 12 in his rookie
season. Yeah, he had 11. I was just looking.
So you'll probably, you know, so maybe he throws another INT or two. You know, and so maybe catches Matt Ryan on that front.
Right.
He probably won't catch him as far as passing touchdowns, though. You never know. Some weird stuff could happen. But I don't necessarily see him catching him there. But just overall total amount of points he himself has put onto that board will have matched Matt Ryan. You know, and now the difference is Matt Ryan, they went, what, 11-5 that year, or 10-6? I think is what we went that year. 10-6 or 11-5. I can't remember which one. Now, I will agree with Dave here. He should have played in the preseason. But what I will say is, to some extent, I kind of understand why he didn't. Not necessarily because I think they thought he was ready and didn't need it. But if he was playing in the preseason, he was going to be playing behind not the number one offensive line because of, like, people were banged up. People were not; those guys were not going to play. So you don't put your it doesn't matter if he's a first year starter, whatever. I'm not putting who I'm saying is my starter for the season in a preseason game behind anything other than the number one offensive line. I'm not doing it. It's not worth that risk. 11-5.
Yeah, everybody's saying 11-5. We're 11-5. Lost in the wild card round. Yep. So what I'm really driving at here is when you look at, you know, a lot of the guys who weren't drafted in the first round and what their first year starting looked like, you know, they had a lot better production than what Ridder has shown this year. Now, the question comes, like, somebody, we're already starting to get camps forming.
Yeah. As another guy real quick, yeah. Josh Allen. Like, yeah, this year he's been kind of, you know, he's had kind of a bad turnover year this year.
Yeah, he had 14 so far.
But the previous years, previous like 2 or 3 years, that dude's been super dynamic, thrown a bunch of touchdowns, ran for a bunch of touchdowns, ran for all this stuff. His first year in the league, total of 10 touchdowns.
Yeah.
10 right. total.
Yep.
For the entire year. And he had something like, he only had 2,074 yards, 10 touchdowns, 12 interceptions in 12 games in his rookie season. So you put that up against Ridder, you know, he also had like a pass rating of 67.9. I'm just simply saying, like, if we had Josh Allen in his rookie year doing those same things here in Atlanta, everybody would be saying that he's not the guy. Let's go draft his replacement.
Oh, agree.
I'm not saying Ridder is going to be the next guy that is the next Josh Allen. I'm not trying to say that. But, like, we see flashes, and that's, like, what I wanted to see from him last year. I wish we would have started him. I saw somebody say that. We should have started him last year. And if we had seen the flashes last year that we have seen this year, I think people would be more excited. The problem is, you went through Mariota most of the last season, got a tiny glimpse of him at the end of the season with Ridder. And then you come into this season thinking, oh, he's going to take a step, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. When if we had gotten this same exact performance out of him last year, then nobody's looking at it and saying, like, oh, he's trash, he's this. It's like, no, he's a rookie playing behind, you know, the same offensive line, but, like, the skill players were not necessarily there. You didn't have Bijan. You still had Drake. You still had Pitts. You still had some of the other guys, but you didn't have whatever. I'm simply saying you know, whether or not it's fair or not, he's just not going to get the same kind of patience that, you know, a guy that is highly talented coming.
Well, and that is the deal, right? That is like whether you want to call it fair or not. No, he does not have the same leash. He does not have the same patience because we do not have the same patience because you do not have the same investment in him. And now this is where I start to get into my other side of my brain starts to speak up, right? When I look at the history of guys like Kirk Cousins and Russell Wilson, Derek Carr, Dak Prescott, all these guys who were drafted in the later rounds. When I mean later, I mean past the first round. Then that's later for a QB, especially in the modern era of football. Okay. These guys who were drafted in the later rounds, even the Mr. Irrelevant, Brock Purdy, and all this other jazz, is like these guys, especially in this day and age, you have to kind of hit the ground running if you're a later round QB, you know, because of the monetary investment. And so that's my only concern there now is, like, are we willing to be patient? Obviously, the fan base isn't. And you're starting to get, like, camps come popping up. You're getting people who are backing Terry Fontenot and wanting to clean house the rest of the way. You're getting some people who are, this one is obviously the smallest camp, but you're getting some people who are backing Arthur Smith and wanting to, like, fully admit that the first 2 years was a dumpster fire because you really couldn't build much of a roster. So a lot of those folks are saying, well, this is year one, you know,
I'm in that camp.
Right. And so wanting to give, and then you got some people who are in the Ritter camp thinking, you know, stating that, hey, he's a rookie. Essentially, this is his, you know, first year starting. We have to see if he can, you know, make progressions before we just, you know, throw it out. Right. So, my concern is, like, you know, MJ kind of says, like, Daniel Jones, Davis Mills showed flashes with way lesser talent. That's just how it goes. But you can tell Ritter isn't as talented. We have too many weapons to look bad. My problem that has me start to move out of the Ritter camp per se is that I'm not seeing, like, a ton of progression from week one to week 14. There are still, like, he's still throwing behind guys, not like whoa behind, but he still, like, can't get it out necessarily in front of him. A lot of the times they're still making some of the same mistakes that he was making week one, week two. Sometimes he gets punished for it and they get the interceptions. Sometimes he doesn't. He threw one that hit the dude right in the hands and he couldn't catch it, you know? So sometimes he's getting punished. Sometimes he isn't, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And I get that. I will say he looks better to me coming out of the benching than he did before. I think he looks more comfortable. He doesn't look like quite as rattled as he did in that last game before the game that he got benched in. He doesn't look quite like that. He I see progress there. And you know, whether or not he gets another shot at this next year, don't know.
Yeah, I mean, time will tell.
If he does, I mean, he's definitely got things to work on. So now that he will have had a full season, if he's given the opportunity next year, or wins the opportunity, if there's a competition, whatever the case may be, then, you know, you would hope that some of those things, you know, you're still going to throw behind guys from time to time, but,
like, well, and it's not always going to be perfect.
Like, right. Clean that up so that it's more on target more of the time. being better about like trying to recognize what the defense is doing to you before the snap and audible out of it and then audible into the right play. All those different things.
Right. So. All that kind of stuff is, you know, the audible stuff is what comes with experience. Greater Tone with another $5. We appreciate you. He says, we need a, and then here's another, like another issue. We need fourth quarter Dez all four quarters. He's a top five QB in the fourth quarter. Right. I don't grasp that. Like, I don't understand why that's a thing that has been with him from college on. That was one of the knocks. He's a slow starter. Okay. In the NFL, you ain't got time to be a slow starter.
Yeah.
Like, we need consistent play all game. Like, I don't know what the mindset is, excuse my language, I don't know if it's an oh shit mindset.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have that mindset from kickoff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of it's, you know, also like, you know, whether, you know, you could like, we say this sometimes with like some pitchers, right? Some pitchers in Major League Baseball, like they tend to, especially early in their careers, they tend to have those, the first inning or two where right. they seem to like, you know, sometimes they're super sharp, but a lot of the times they're not super sharp. They haven't quite found the location on their fastball, whatever. But if they can make it through those first two, and you know, not just completely lose it, and they get into that third inning, fourth inning, if they can make it there, they kind of get into a groove. They kind of get warmed up a little bit, and maybe that's just like a him thing. And
my daddy used to always say back in the day when with the Braves pitchers with Steve Avery, if he could get out of the first or second inning without giving up a ton of runs, you're gonna have a good game.
Well, it was him and John Smoltz too. Yeah. Like Smoltz was the same way.
I just remember him saying that career. about Avery. Dave Joseph. He said, what would be a good trade for Pitts? I say an above average D line, or you know, D line edge rusher, or Jalen Carter.
You're not getting Jalen Carter.
Not yet. Not yet. Even though I do find it absolutely hilarious that if you go look up anything about Philly right now, it's about their defense, which I chuckle my head off because they were supposed to be the Philly Dogs and winning championships. And, you know, it's all we heard. Anyway, I'm not even getting into that because
that defense got roasted twice. Oh yeah, they got two weeks in a row.
Yeah. But anyway, but back to the Desmond Ridder fourth quarter thing. Like, yeah, I don't know what it is, but he's got to get into that quicker. He's got to get there quicker. If he can get there quicker, then yeah, dude, we got something. Yeah. But you know, the problematic there is like, that's even, he was like that in college and that has followed him into the pros, which I find to be, again, trends that I don't like, you know.
Yeah.
Willie Doc. So Jonathan, if Arthur Smith comes back, you're willing to give Dez another shot? Question mark.
I mean, I'm willing to, if they decide they want to go in the draft and get somebody, like, I hope it's the guy outside of, I think Drake May is the guy, but we're not getting up to Drake May.
Okay? No, but I think we're in the potentially Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy range.
I think it's probably, it might be like Jaden Daniels / Michael Penix / JJ McCarthy. We're like in that realm.
Yeah. Potentially / Bo Nix, depending on what you think about, like we're in that second tier.
How old is Bo Nix?
He's really not that old. I think he's only 23.
I feel like I've been watching that dude play college football for the past 10 years.
Well, cause he started playing when he was 19 in college. So on to the somewhat next like topic that is a trend that I don't like. History of a losing season. Okay. Here's the deal here. When I looked, and I didn't look at everybody, I'm sure there's some obscure coach that I didn't think about or I didn't pull up. But when I looked at Super Bowl winning coaches or even coaches that I thought were successful coaches maybe didn't win the big game, but I still felt like we're successful coaches in the league. When I looked at their first three seasons, there was only one coach that had more than three losing seasons or more that went on to be successful. I've already told you, Jonathan, who that was. I want to give the chat a few seconds to pull up who they think that coach is. But I will say this, by the third season, and these were coaches that inherited bad situations, but by the third season, you're starting to put together a winning season. And most of them was like a double digit win season. Like we went like, you know, 6-7, and then 11 and then 12 or then 13, you know? And so the trend to me is like, very rarely did I see a coach, now a coach that was not successful, but had longevity, had a bunch of losing seasons, and that was Jason Garrett. He had like 4 or 5 losing seasons in a row and then finally started ripping off some winning ones. Yeah. Okay. But he was given a little bit longer of a leash because he was Jerry Jones's guy, you know?
Yeah. Well, I will say this for the folks that are saying that, please get Arthur Smith out of here. Please. Like, I think, I don't know for 100% fact, but the things that I've heard talked about, even from the players themselves, and just people around the organization, is that the locker room is super solid. Like the culture that he's building there of how guys handle their business in the locker room, how guys, all that jazz is that Arthur Smith runs a very tight ship,
right?
He keeps things in order. He does all the things that you want a good coach to do, and he's got a well-run organization right now as it stands. And as long as the players still play hard for him, as long as there's no crazy turmoil running through the locker room, as long as he doesn't lose that locker room, I think I don't really see a scenario as it stands right now where Arthur Smith is not back next year. Now, who's the quarterback? Don't know.
Right.
But I don't see that.
To my question or my trivia earlier, who was the only coach that I know of to start in the modern era? I want to state that. Like from 2000 up.
Chuck Knoll.
I have no clue. I did not look up Chuck Knoll. Okay. Maybe Chuck Knoll is, but I wanted to not guy like, cause to me back in the day, like football was run way different. There was a lot more patience because there wasn't the crazy amount of money that's involved now. Now there's a stupid amount of money. So we need return on investments quickly. Okay. So the patience isn't nearly as good as it used to be. With owners and stuff like that. The one of the last vestiges of patience is like the Steelers. You know, they very rarely make a change.
Big what Lowe. World, Bo?
Big Lowe's up in the house. All right. B Atlanta says, I'm just guessing, but Mike Tomlin? Nope. Mike Tomlin had his first two seasons were a little rough, but then he went on he hasn't had a losing season in like over a decade. So somebody said Willie Dock said Kyle Shanahan. Nope. By the third season, Kyle Shanahan had won 11 games. I think it was 11 or 12.
Yep.
Bradley said Tom Coughlin. Nope. I thought so. I thought maybe Tom Coughlin too. But Tom Coughlin, by his third season, he had the Jags rocking and rolling, at least for a few years. The answer is Bill Belichick.
Yep.
Bill Belichick is the only coach. He had 4 losing seasons in with the Browns. And then, did the whole Jets and then to the Patriots. Now, if you want to talk about just his Patriots, like tenure, he had 2 bad seasons. By the third season, it was, I think the second season was a good season. Third season was a bad season. And that fourth season, it was, you know, full, you know, tilt boogie.
Yep.
And so I look at this saying, okay, history doesn't make the future, but history does like set trends. It's something that you like, if so much of this has taken place, it's very unlikely that somebody's going to buck a trend.
Yeah.
When a whole bunch of something, you know, has, you know, transpired beforehand. Now, I tweeted this out earlier. You know, for those of you who follow me, y'all saw this. I would much rather Arthur Smith and hell, even Desmond Ridder figure it out. Because I would much rather have stability again for the next decade. Would much rather have it.
Yeah.
Y'all, some of y'all who've been around long enough know that Arthur Smith was the guy that I wanted here. I cannot and I will not discount that this is the same guy who took a quarterback that Miami had given up on and turned him into a consistent quarterback. And I'm talking about Tannehill. You cannot discount that. I don't care if you like Arthur Smith or not.
Yep.
You cannot discount that. If you want to say, oh, he had A.J. Brown. Oh, he had Corey Davis. Oh, he had Derrick Henry. Oh, he had Ryan Tannehill throwing the daggum ball.
Yeah, I mean, they still had those guys with Marcus Mariota.
Right. And so he was designing plays and designing an offense that was a very efficient, very balanced, and was very good in the run zone, in the red zone. So you cannot tell me that in 3 years time, 2.5 years, whatever you want to call it, that 3 years time that the man has forgotten how to football. Yeah. Has forgotten how to coach.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to say that. So
what? Well, and it's again, it comes down to like, what is he like in the building? Like how does he run his practices? How does he handle business in, you know, all the stuff that we don't see? How is that run? Right, because that's going to matter to an Arthur Blank, as well as, yes, he wants the winning, but if what he sees from Arthur Smith on the back end of this, that the things that we don't see all the time, if what he sees there, he likes what he sees there, and he thinks that, you know, if you just keep supporting him, it's going to get there. Then that's how you get a guy who potentially, we don't know yet how it's going to end up, but potentially may have 3 losing seasons to start his career that you hold on to and you're patient with.
Right.
The last thing we want to, and Grant, if we fired him at the end of the season, you still couldn't say we're the Panthers, but you don't want to be that. You don't want to even be potentially thought of as like, oh, who even wants that? Like, this is like, it's one of 32 jobs. So it should be something that everybody wants to get. But like the Panthers firing Reich and probably letting go of that entire dream team of coaches over the offseason, you're gonna like, that's gonna turn people off from like, I don't know. And that's the last thing Arthur Blank wants, is to be looked at as that kind of organization. He wants to be like, hey, you can come in, you can you know it may not happen right away. You know, but show me that you're on the right track, not just on the field, but in the locker room and in the meetings and all that jazz. Show me that you can do that side of it as well, and we'll work and we'll do what we need to get where we want to be.
Right. Dirty Bird of the Dirty, he says, if only we had drafted Brock Purdy, if only.
I mean, who, like, how could we miss that? How could we miss it?
Willie Dock. With the $5, he says, let's assume Smith is the head coach. Does he ride with Ridder, go after Fields, or Jaden Daniels? What would be the spin on this? I'll say this. I already know, you know, Jonathan's, you know, take an opinion on Fields. But if you could get Fields for relatively cheap, in a sense of like draft capital, if it's like a Sam Darnold type trade, which was something that Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network had thrown out there, which was a second, a fourth, and a sixth, really not that much. I, and this is me, would take a swing on that, because if you look at what Fields has done in the past like 7 or 8 games, he's been playing really well. If it was just a situation where the offensive coordinator has taken time to get used to him, whatever, I don't know. Okay. But if you look at the career, not career, but if you look at this year, and I did this compared to Ridder, right now he's playing at a tick better level than Ridder, and he's more athletic and definitely has more arm talent than Ridder. Now, however you weigh that, because you can talk about decision making, you could talk about, you know, what have you, but in what is supposed to be a run heavy, play action heavy offense, I think he could thrive here. Now, the question is, do they want him? Because they had a chance to draft him when they first got here, and they took Pitts instead. Okay. So that's my thoughts there. The question you really have to ask yourself is, do you trust this staff to develop another quarterback? Right. And I'm talking about Jaden Daniels in this aspect, because you go with Jaden Daniels, college wise, what we have seen, Jaden Daniels has a lot more talent than Ridder. Accuracy, his downfield accuracy is way better. Like the yards, like 20 plus yards, you know, type. Oh, yeah. Of definitely elusive.
Yes. Fast as sin.
Right. Fast, definitely elusive. Not. Depending on what website you look on, whether that man is 183 pounds or 28 or 215, I don't know. Like, I don't know. We'll find out at the combine when he hits the combine, because that'll be official measurements. So, you know, if you go with Jaden Daniels, he's definitely an electric, you know, person, right? And out of those two, like, you give me those three options, I think for my money, I would probably go with Jaden Daniels or Justin Fields, just because of the, like, I like the, like, home connection, which is something that this staff has done more than once. You know, it has done the whole bringing a kid home kind of deal. Yeah. that could be fun for the crowd itself.
I mean, I don't know. Go talk to the Bulldog fans. They might disagree.
I don't know. Well, a lot of those people are like, once a dog, always a dog kind of thing. So, but either way, you bring him back to Georgia, which they seem to like to do. And I think, given the way he plays, he could operate pretty well, especially with the weapons that we have. So that's my thoughts. Mm-hmm. What you got?
I mean, some of this also comes down to how do we finish the season, right?
That's
you know, let's just say we roll off 4 straight wins to end the season. If we roll off 4 straight wins to end the season, the likelihood is that we're division winners.
Right.
We play at home in the playoffs. If we at least put up a good showing in the playoffs, both Ridder and Smith and just the team as a whole. If we do that, there's a very real chance that that Ritter's back next year. There's a very, very real chance. Because, you know, you show me that you can not only, when your team needed it the most, reel off 4 straight wins, play really well on the field, and then go into the playoffs and at least act, you know, look like you belong there. Like, you show me that, then that's going to get a lot of cachet in everybody's opinion of Ritter, where it counts in the front office and in the coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, let's say we still win the division, but, you know, Ritter kind of keeps playing about where he's at, maybe a little bit less. Then I think that next year, if I was going to make a change, okay, if I was going to do that, I would honestly, it would probably be cheaper to figure out a way to go and get Daniels than it would be to get, based on what you're talking about, a second, a fourth, and a sixth. Like, because I could see moving up. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens, post-combine and all that jazz and see how much he rises, you know. But as it stands right now, everything I've heard is this guy's like mid-teens to like maybe even as high as or maybe even as low as like into the upper 20s mm-hmm. for Jaden Daniels. And so if I was going to go with Jaden Daniels, it, you know, the move to go get him would probably cost less than whatever trade capital you would do for Fields. And Fields, you know, the upside with Fields is that the guy's been in the league at least. So there's that, not but also
absolutely over, so to speak.
Right. But also the guy has shown you some really bad tendencies and some really bad play at this level. And, you know, if I'm going to make a change, I'm either going to make a change for a, if I'm making a change to a current quarterback in the league, I'm probably going to see if try to do what I can to get Kirk Cousins. I'd try to bring him in.
Yeah.
Than Fields. And Cousins doesn't cost you draft capital. He just costs you money.
Right. My thing is like, I worry about like anybody coming off an injury, like, and he's at a point in his career where he's not going, it's going to cost money. You know what I'm saying? It's going to cost a good chunk to bring him in. He's not going to come in and play for pennies.
Trey Lance, what? Who really wants Trey Lance?
At this junction, like
Dallas is going to have to pay somebody to take him off their hands.
Nah, they'll just cut him. If that's the case, then you might be able to. But no, he's, I don't know. All right, there's some ones I've starred that I want to get to. This has been an interesting night. So, T-Mac 1496 says, question, is it bad luck or can you pinpoint the possible issue with our Falcons? Reason why I like this question is kind of alludes back to something I said earlier with people are starting to drive themselves into like certain camps. What we're doing right now for a lot of folks is that we're taking narratives that we're hearing or we're developing narratives and we're just running with them regardless, right? One of the big ones is, Arthur Smith's a bad play caller. That's a great narrative right now. So anytime anything goes wrong, Arthur Smith's a bad play caller. Arthur Smith's a bad play caller. Okay. I challenge anybody to tell me what plays he's calling. Like, do you have the play sheet? Like, and I go this way because even when I listen to guys like JT O'Sullivan, there's another podcast I listen to every now and again. That's the Play Callers podcast. Like, even defensive guys I listen to, like Coach Vass of Make Defenses Great Again podcast. Those guys who have done it their whole lives, whether it's the coach side, player side, or what have you, those guys, 9 times out of 10, are unwilling to say that they know what is being called. And if anybody has a better chance of knowing what is being called, it's the guys who've done it. It's the guys who've played it. Most of them will say, oh, well, this looks like it could be this, or it looks like it could be that. And they 9 times out of 10 follow it up with, but I'm not 100% sure because I'm not in the room. Mm-hmm. Guess what? Ain't none of us in the room. I have taken time to legitimately, and I pull this book out for the reason to show you.
Oh, Lord.
to, can y'all even see that, or is it just too blanked out? To chart actual plays for multiple games, not just our games. This, let's see if it'll focus. That, if you can move by, that's Chiefs versus the Bucks. Okay. And guess what? At this level, almost everybody runs the same type of plays. There's not a huge ton of innovation. And Huckle, I get it, man. I know you ain't got no love whatsoever for Arthur Smith. You have made that plain and clear throughout the whole show and every time you come on. I get it. I absolutely get it.
And Kurt Warner, what I will say is this. Exactly what you're saying there, which is every team out. So you say every team out there, they all run the same kind of plays or same, maybe there's little tiny variations on how certain teams are coached to run certain plays. And maybe that one coach likes to do this play with reads going this direction. And one coach likes to do the reads going in that direction. And whatever. There's a lot of little tiny differences. But the overall scheme, the overall plays themselves, a lot of them are the same no matter where you go. So then you start thinking, well, when a guy comes in, why can't he just pick up an offense right away? Well, a lot of times it's the verbiage is very different. When they audible and what audibles off of various plays, some of that can vary differently. So there's all kinds of different reasons why it's tough to pick up certain systems over others. A lot of that comes down to terminology, right? How long is your play to call out versus like some other team that may have shorter, like they've condensed it so that it's a much shorter phrase that they have to spit out. So the terminology tends to be the thing. And Kurt Warner, he could be right in that particular instance. But some of this can also be, and that's probably the thing I've been most disappointed with this year, is the first 2 years, the one thing you could say, even the where we were getting blown out a little bit more, by and large, that first year, for the most part, we looked like we were prepared. We were just getting flat out beat easily, but we looked prepared. We looked like we were doing the things we were supposed to be doing. Guys were going where they were supposed to go. And then last year we had like really to the nth degree, like we look prepared, well coached. Okay. This year, defense, by and large, we've had some blown coverages here and there, but every defense does. By and large, you see that from the defense this year where they look extremely well coached, extremely well prepared. Everybody's generally where they're supposed to be. They're doing what they're supposed to be. They get beat sometimes, but they're still where they're supposed to be. Right? We don't get a ton of penalties. We don't get a lot of that stuff. And really on the offense, we're not getting a ton of penalties, but I think the biggest problem that I'm seeing on the offense is guys are like the plays are called and guys are not where they're supposed to be in the route. The guys are either they're supposed to be doing a clear out and they're not fast enough, or they're not getting out into their route quick enough to get that clear out, or guys are their spacing's messed up. Maybe because, they have a lot more choice routes in these concepts, and maybe the guys are making the wrong choice. Like instead of going in, they should have gone out, or instead of out and in, or up or whatever. And we end up with guys in the same position a lot of the times. And some of that comes down to execution. Guys are either not doing the play properly or for whatever reason, it just doesn't seem like it's as well coached as we were last year. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
No idea. But that's probably the most frustrating thing is how unprepared on the offensive side we look this year, which has not been the case the first 2 years under Arthur Smith. So I don't know what's changed. Was Charles London that big a deal? And was he the guy that kept everybody in lockstep? I don't know.
Yeah, no. And that's the thing is like we automatically assume, and I see it here in the chat, like, the vast majority of the fan base has made their mind up. Like at this point, I've seen it more than once. Matty Ghost, I hope we lose because I want Arthur Fluff fired so badly. I don't grasp that concept from a fan. Like, look, right now I may not like what's going on. I may be frustrated by what is going on, by what I see, by the amount of drives that stalled out. But at the end of the day, I want this team to be successful. I want, this coaching staff to be successful. Because I promise you guys, if we start down this trend of firing a coach every 2-3 years, and we're never going to be successful, ever. Yeah. Like, it's not going to happen. You're not just going to magically pop open a, winning season. Yes, you're going to get, some oddball oddities like the Texans who are 7-6. But for the most part, you're not going to get that.
You're going to be the Cleveland Browns.
You'll be the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yep.
Like, you'll be what have you. And as far as, you want to talk about, coaching jobs, I challenge every one of you to go listen to a Philly radio station right now and how they're talking about Jalen Hurts and how they're talking about Nick Sirianni. And
you literally had a guy talking about how he thought right now Mariota was better for the Philadelphia Eagles. It would be more productive than Jalen Hurts right now.
Right. So, I mean, I get it. Willie said, asked, $2, he says, do we make the playoffs? I don't know. I really don't. Like, I'm pretty sure we're going to win Sunday in Carolina. Speaking of Sunday, Big Low wanted me to remind everybody, just a reminder, we're having a watch party. It's down at Murph's near the Galleria. We'll be down there it's starting at noon. I won't be down there at noon. I'll probably be down there closer to the second half just because I just don't get out of church quick enough, to get down there. But it won't be just Big Low. It'll be Big Low. It'll be us, or at least me making an appearance. I'm not 100% sure if Jonathan's going to be able to make it or not.
We'll see.
Yeah. If you like Smitty Sports Machine, I think is supposed to be there. Out of Your Falcon Mind guys are supposed to be there. Our good buddy Dansky from Canada is supposed to be there. If any of y'all interact with him on Twitter. But I'll say that, Bradley says I got to drive down to Atlanta. I hope you do.
Absolutely.
I hope you do. I find this, I'm not picking on you, Maddie. You're just putting up the comments that I see, right? Yeah. And the trends we were talking about. I see things like this. Hire Ryan Nielsen. He knows how to coach players. Okay. Does he know how to coach a whole team?
Yeah.
Does he know how to run an entire team? Like, we see coordinators who are doing good and having a good, success with the team they're in, a la Ben Johnson with Detroit. Slowick out there with the Texans. Bobby Slowick. These guys are doing great right now. But I remind every one of you that when we hired Arthur Smith, he was the hot name. And Nick brings up a great point. Dan Quinn is killing it as a DC.
Yep. And everybody's like, if McCarthy doesn't get it done this year and get him at least to the NFC Championship game or whatever, then he needs to go and bring on Dan Quinn. Quinn.
Yeah.
Dan Quinn will get you to where we ended up getting. Will likely get you to where we ended up getting last time.
Either way, has Dan Quinn learned how to evaluate players better?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, it go to automatically assume that a coordinator is going to make a banging head coach just because he's innovative, he's whatever. Remind yourself that every one of these coaches that you want to fire was a hot name coordinator. So just keep that in mind.
Or you end up like the Browns and you have some of their guys that they hired because nobody else wanted to work for your organization.
Yeah.
Because they hired some, there was a guy I had never heard of. They're like, oh, he's our new head coach. I'm like, what? And then he got like a season and it was gone.
Yeah. There's a handful of them. Then you had guys that you never heard of, like Mike Smith, who came in and was been the most successful Falcons head coach to date. Bradley says, just look at the Chargers. Hot name.
Yep.
Brandon Staley. They got some amazing star power on that defense. Derwin James.
The hell, they got amazing star power on that offense. They just had a game where they put up 6 points.
6 points. Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get it. Everybody's mad. Everybody's ticked off.
Yeah.
I don't have the answers. But I do caution y'all to think that just firing people is the answer.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not.
I want this to change.
Yeah.
I hope that this is the staff that can change it. If not, like, yeah, you got to fire them, but that puts us back. Think about it like this. If you hit the reset button right now, like y'all want to do, it's going to be at least 2 to 3 years before we can be successful again. Because whoever you bring in has a different thought process and a different philosophy. And so he's going to want different players. He's going to want different things to, and that takes time to build. Yep. So if you're not willing to give time.
Well, okay. So let's say this. If you fire Arthur Smith this offseason, I can almost guarantee you Ryan Nielsen is not going to be the next head coach. Okay. So if you fire Arthur Smith, you lose Ryan Nielsen. Ryan Nielsen goes somewhere else.
Possibly. Yep. Like, okay. unless you think the tie between, because like if you're in the Fontenot camp, if you think the tie between Jerry or Terry Fontenot and Ryan Nielsen is strong enough to keep him around as a DC, then, you know, maybe you got something there. Maybe you can bring in, or, you know, Willie Dock's talking about like elevating Jerry Gray. Maybe. I don't know. Like, what makes you think Jerry Gray can run? That's the part where, I don't know. It's, you're in a crap situation, basically, right now.
Well, okay, so the good thing is we're not looking at a team like the Panthers, where everybody had these huge expectations. They had this supposed great coaching staff come in. They go and get their, you know, the number one pick. You know, they bring him in. He hasn't looked anything like what everybody thought he was going to look like. And now you're 1-10, 1-11. And you fired your head coach. You know, we're not that kind of team. Where we're at right now is we're a team that is underachieving based on what we have talent wise. That if we can get it figured out, right now, we don't have a ton of super. Yeah, we got Campbell, but otherwise, like, and, you know, you got your Onyemata's and guys like that. But there's a lot of still like young players that are on this team, both on the defense and the offense. We're seeing a couple of like young guys in Landman and Clark. Helms, we're seeing a lot of those guys get a lot of really good playing time, to where like this defense is going to get younger next year. Like, it's going to happen. And, you know, so this team is not that far off. Like, again, you know, the problem is I'm going to say this, and you're going to say, well, we said that last year. Well, yeah, but this year, like, if there's just a couple of things that go just a little different, the entire outlook on the season right now is completely different, and we've just got to get over that hump. And that's what we're striving to do. You know, whether or not Smith is going to give up play calling duties and bring in an OC, I don't know. Whether will he bring in a passing game coordinator like everybody says he needs? I don't know. But at the end of the day,
what does Art need to be successful? It's easy to say competent QB play, like consistent QB play, is like the top of my list. Can that be Ritter? Who knows? Time will tell, one way or the other. But like, it's hard for me, again, it's hard for me to think that a guy who did what he did in the 2 years of Tennessee has forgotten how to coach. Okay. So, you know, consistent QB play would be my first thought. And that, like, yeah, like, that's it to me. Consistent QB play, another voice in the room. I've been saying that at least for a little while.
And Bradley, I agree with you. Like, we're close. Like, this team is so close.
Well, the question is, like, can you get past it? Like, there's been
right.
There's plenty of coaches who can't ever figure out how to get past it and go back to being good coordinators, a la Dan Quinn. So, who knows if he's going to figure it out. So, again, all right, we can run this thing in a million different circles. If we start winning, all this goes away. If we don't start winning, if we end up with a losing season, I'll probably be on the same bandwagon y'all wanting to fire everybody. Because, like I said, history shows very few coaches have been able to overcome, you know, bad, you know, stretches like this to start their coaching career.
I just got to have patience, man. That's what I'm doing. I'm being patient.
There you go. All right, folks, we appreciate y'all tuning in for all the ones who, you know, gave us tips. We appreciate you greatly for all the ones who like to come in and be like semi trolls. We still appreciate you. Like,
absolutely.
We still appreciate y'all being here. If it wasn't for y'all, we wouldn't do it. That's just how that goes. I hope y'all have a great weekend. I hope we're back on Tuesday talking about a win. If you're around Murph's in the Galleria on Sunday, you want to stop in, a good chunk of us will be there. Stop in, say hello. Maybe one of us will buy you a drink or buy you a side of French fries. I can't commit to more than a side of French fries. You don't know. Stuff's expensive nowadays. But anyway, we love all y'all. We hope y'all have a great weekend. As always, follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grim1128, GRIMM1128. Jonathan?
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi.
And y'all can always catch up with Toby D at TobyD1991. Keep your eye on the channel. We'll be back live again next Tuesday. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.